This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, folks. I am so excited about our show today, and I hope you are as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be talking about finding strength, courage, and wisdom in any moment. And boy, oh boy, I can't imagine a better conversation to be having at this point in time, because a glance at our current headlines and tragedy is, it's all around us, from devastating fires, terrible earthquakes, catastrophic hurricanes, rampant sexual abuse that continues to come out, tragic shootings, nasty political feuds. It's all around us. So how do we embrace and accept the most painful parts of our lives? Great conversation we're going to be having with the author of a brand new book called A Fierce Heart: How to Find Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. And in her book, Spring Washam, I want to recognize her and introduce her. She's a well-known meditation and Dharma teacher based in Oakland, California. She's a founding member and core teacher at the East Base Meditation Center located in downtown Oakland. So she's in my state. I'm so excited about it, because in her book, Spring shares her contemporary and unique interpretation of Buddhist teachings, along with stories from her life, her family, and ancestors. She includes personal revelations of her difficulties and challenges growing up, including the violence she experienced at a young age, to illustrate how she personally learned to embrace it all. And she's here with us to share her wisdom and insight to how we can have that same healthy attitude in the world that we're living in currently. Spring, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Holly. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Yeah, I was telling you, I got your book sent to me yesterday, so I haven't had a chance to read it thoroughly, but it's so beautiful, and it just feels like something I want to just grab and take wherever I'm going, and if I have a moment, just open it up and start to read. So tell me this, how did a girl from Long Beach, California become a shaman from the Amazon and a yogi from the Himalayas? Like, how did this transformation happen?
Well, first off, I got the nickname Shaman from my main teacher, Doc Cornfield, and he just used to call me that because I was always going to Peru and studying. And so, I think a lot of things that motivate many of us to get on a spiritual path is usually suffering. When I meet people on retreats or in classes, oftentimes it's usually a divorce or a breakup or something is not working. And yeah, often that's kind of the beginning of our path. And that was the way it was for me when I was very, very young. I had a very strong intuitive part of me that was always seeking for answers. And I started studying psychology when I was just a teenager. And it was kind of to treat my own depression and all the trauma and the family problems. And I had to leave my mother's home and I was living on my own. And so I started to recognize something is going on with my mind. Mm. It's a thinking problem. And I was really interested in exploring that, you know, what is happening with my mind. So that led me into a path of meditation. And I kept going with that, and I ended up at a Buddhist retreat when I was 23 and met my main teacher at that time. And it felt like, wow, this is what I've been looking for, a map on understanding why I'm suffering, how to overcome the suffering, and practices to do it.
And thank you so much for correcting my pronunciation of shaman into shaman, because of course I knew that, but I looked at the word and I froze.
You could say either is fine. Yeah.
But I have to say, from my experience, and certainly my own experience, and I, you know, the more and more courage I get in the public domain to sort of offer up truths about myself and my own past and my own struggles, the better it feels, and it feels like the more effective I am. And definitely when it comes to being an author and sharing your story, I feel personally when I read something like that, when somebody has gone through it, that it's almost like it touches me so much deeper than, you know, I have to read a lot of journals and kind of keep up on things and things that are evidence-based and have these clinical studies. It just seemed to be extremely boring for me. It's almost like it doesn't sink in. But I love that It feels like from even a young age where you grew up in a biracial home, right? And then you were always fighting race and culture and your identity, and then running away from your mother's abusive boyfriend, and then coming into this whole idea that, hey, what's going on with my mind? So how did you find Buddhism? How did this all get started? How did you, you know, kind of grab hold to that path?
Well, that's kind of a funny story. I started meditating when I was about 23, so 20 years ago. And at the time I was reading books, somebody had left this meditation book by this Hindu teacher. It was, you know, beautiful. It was about meditation, and I really loved it. And it was that book that awoke in me a deep desire to live a spiritual path. So basically, I started meditating on my own, and I would go to this community, and we would do these three-hour meditations. But they never told me anything. They would just say, think of love, think of God, you know, and I'd go, okay. And then for 3 hours, my mind would go insane, right? I was like, wait, I don't think I'm really getting this. I don't know if it's working. And I started to realize, I think I need instructions. I need a teacher. I need someone to kind of tell me how to do these practices. And a friend told me about a retreat going on in the desert. I didn't know it was Buddhist. She said they have vegetarian food. They'll teach you meditation. They give instruction every day, and it's in silence. So I signed up. And then when I signed up for this 10-day retreat, it was just as if the whole thing just opened up. I got instruction. I gained an understanding. And then I heard the teachings of the Buddha for the first time, and this idea of awakening and ending suffering and compassion, it just touched something so deep in me. And it was basically like I was remembering something about myself. I always call it a very deep remembering.
Right. When you kind of come home, in a sense,
yes.
To yourself. I love that experience. And so, all right. So for our listeners, because I know that they are, as well as I am, just overwhelmed, I would say, with the amount of tragedy and aggressiveness that seems to be around us these days, as, you know, I mentioned, from the natural disasters that have been happening to these political feuds, to the rampant sexual abuse that's coming out, all of these things, you know, what you say that we need to embrace it all, even these, you know, most painful aspects, to cultivate this fierce heart that you're talking about. But how do we do that? How do we start when we're feeling so overwhelmed?
Yeah, this is a really great topic, and I can't imagine a more perfect time for this book to come out right now, because even in our communities in Oakland, it's just so much suffering around what's happening in the world, and every possible trigger that we have is getting triggered right now. You know, right. Anything that, you know, for a spiritual practitioner, in some way, as I understand the teaching and I've come to see for myself, sometimes it's the darkest hour that we grow. You know, there's something about being forced to pay attention in a different way. So one of the ways that I really talk about meditation and teach meditation, because you certainly do not have to be a Buddhist. You can be any faith. This is not about, you know, becoming something. It's about really finding some stillness. And that's really where I start with people. Like, let's just sit and become still so that we can kind of listen to our heart. You know, the heart in my mind, you know, I'm very much a, I guess, I study it on multiple levels, energetically and on the spiritually. And so I encourage people to start becoming still, listening to the heart, and it really starts there. So developing some kind of awareness-based practice where you intentionally come home. There's so much madness right now, right? Everything's going so fast. It feels so out of control. So the only thing that you really can control is what you're doing with your mind, moment to moment.
Right.
That you have power over. And,
yeah.
You know, and I want to remind people that you have power. You can stop at any moment and learn to become still. So rather you do that with walks, or you go to a meditation class, or you do yoga, or you find some time to turn everything off and become still, that for me is the doorway for people.
All right, we're going to be right back, but here is a word from our sponsors for today, Organifi. Folks, I want to talk to you about Organifi Red Juice. Yep, not green juice. We're talking about red juice today. It is a superfood red juice powder, and it's packed with antioxidants and immune-boosting herbs. You simply add a scoop to water or anything else you want, and you get your daily boost of antioxidants from your favorite berries. You get your boost of energy and immune system from reishi and cordyceps mushrooms, and it also has a powerful adaptogen to support in balancing your system with all the stress that we have. The other great thing about it is it tastes amazing. And it's not just any red juice, it's organic, and it's upgraded with 11 different superfoods. So folks, go to Organifi.com, that's Organifi, use the code MINDFUL and get 20% off your red juice. It's quick, it's easy, and it's nutrition on the go. You get your juice without the mess, and you get the benefits without breaking the bank. You're saving money, you're saving time, and you're getting your health on. Organifi, Organifi.com. Use the code MINDFUL, 20% off. All right, do you hear that, listeners? That's really important, because I know we talk about, and I think that's part of the reason why I call my podcast Mindful Medicine, because there is, in my world, I think I've always been so surprised at how much information there is out there on how to be well in general, overall, you know, not getting into any specifics, even, you know, our emotional states and things that we're talking about today. But so few of us are actually kind of grabbing a hold of that information and actually translating it into outcomes and making a difference. And so I've always scratched my head and wanted people to come back to their own mind so they could use it. And, I think it's such a kind of a calming idea that we do have a place that we can go when, you know, to be very myopic, where when there's so much going on around us that we can come back to and feel safe. But I think that it's challenging because we are so disconnected, and we're also outwardly focused these days on our devices and things. And so, but you say that's the start, and I love that. And so you also talk about forgiveness quite a bit, and being such an important aspect of cultivating this fierce heart. Why is it so important?
Well, it's, you know, in some ways, we carry so many resentments and hatred and anger and the burdens and what has happened in history. And I just started to see that when I was working in inner city communities, that there was so much, there's so much misunderstanding about what forgiveness is, that people would think, oh, it's about the other person. And I started to say, no, this is really more about forgiving ourselves and letting go. It was more about healing the past, making peace with it in some way. And so one of the things I talk about with forgiveness, and I have a chapter in my book about it, where I forgive my family and other people who have done things, you know, very traumatic things. What I talk about as far as a, you know, Buddhist psychology perspective is what we're forgiving is greed, hatred, and delusion. You know, ultimately, we're forgiving a confused mind. Anybody who would attack me or hurt me or abuse me in some way, they're obviously, it's like confused. It's confused mind, right? Because when we're clear and we're centered, we're actually very kind people. You know, and I also like to remind people of that, how kind they are. When they come on meditation retreats, they often tap into this innate goodness. Like, oh, right, I really am nice, you know, and so and not nice in a way that's deluded, but they just feel more into their true nature. So talking about forgiveness from the perspective of consciousness, you know, a clear mind and a deluded mind, when we're believing our thoughts, we always end up hurting people. You know, if I think you're a bad person, or I project onto you. So I talk a lot about that, the need to forgive for our own freedom, our own well-being. I mean, this is how we restore our own life energy back to us. When it's tied up in fight all day long. And that's what happens, that people notice when they start to meditate, they say, oh my gosh, I'm fighting in my head. I fight with mm-hmm. this person, I fight with this, and it's so painful and ultimately unhealthy physically. Our body is carrying that. So forgiveness right. for me is a big path to making peace with what has happened to us and then using those traumas. And we all know those stories of people who have these horrific things and then they use it, you know, for the benefit of others. And we love those stories, don't we?
Yeah.
You know,
we sure do.
And so we all, those are the stories of all of us. So I really
yeah, and I think it's inside of, you're right. Yeah, it's inside of all of us. I mean, it's certainly we can see things like on the CNN heroes and, you know, all of these. But everybody has a potential to do that. Everybody has those
yes.
stories. And I think you're right. No, so you talk about meditation as sort of being that place where we can come, start to sort of understand what's going on in our mind, our inner world, stay connected. Can you give us briefly what it would be like, you know, a lesson in meditation, like sort of walk us through that?
Yeah, for most people, a beginning point, and I think it's very accessible, is just to begin to slow down. And as you slow down, to just start to feel your breathing. Because a lot of times we get going so fast in the mind, we disassociate from our body, right? Where our body is a million miles away. So oftentimes what I just have people do, and even in this moment, is just to start coming back into your breath, feeling your breath. So we just kind of start there, just feeling the in-breath and then the out-breath. And through that doorway, we just start calming down. We start connecting more with our body, because our body is in the present moment. Our mind can be a million miles away in a fight, in a feud, you know, reliving the past or projecting into the future.
Right.
But our body is right here. So we use the body, you know, it's a mind-body connection. So to just begin with breathing, feeling your breath one moment at a time. It's a practice, and with all practices, they just take time. You know, it's like we're
yeah.
really relearning how to listen to ourselves. You know, we might have spent a lifetime fighting and racing and reacting to every single thought. So this is kind of a new way. How do I become still and just learn how to be? And one moment of mindfulness can lead to another moment.
Yeah, it's kind of stringing those moments together. I had a patient
yeah.
once, it was quite a while ago, and he actually lived on the West Coast, but worked in the East Coast. And so by the time he would get up in the morning, he'd have 3 hours worth of work and emails that have piled up. And it was, it caused him such incredible anxiety that it was sort of helping him spin completely out of control in so many different ways. And, one of the things that we devised, and I think there's an ebook out there called A Power Pause, but we called it A Power Pause. I didn't know it at the time, but we called it A Power Pause because I said, listen, let's just start, even if it's for 30 seconds, because what he would do is just like, his idea was that if I can get to my emails sooner, that's the quicker they're going to be out of the inbox and the better off I'm going to be, right? And so he would just like, and it was just this constant sort of do loop of this cycle that he was in. And so we devised this, and he could only literally do it before he opened anything, phone, computer, anything. He could only do it for 30 seconds to just breathe and to think about what he was grateful for and what was important to him. And it was mostly his two kids and his family. You know, but he built on it. He built on it, you know, as he got used to that 30 seconds, he went and took a minute. And now he has this practice that I'm like so blown away by, because he started to string these moments of just, cause he allowed, I think, in that process to have him kind of set the stage for his day, to have him kind of direct his to-do list instead of somebody else. And I thought it was fascinating how he progressed through that.
Yeah, that I hear stories like that all the time, because we feel so much anxiety, and the anxiety makes us feel powerless over our life. You know, we feel like I have to do this or I have to do that, or, you know, and sort of there's something about the starting a practice where you say, yeah, I'm going to practice this for 10 minutes or 15 minutes and I'm going to sit down and the benefit, and you know, a lot of times people think, oh, this is just hippie talk, but there's a science that's proving this now.
Oh,
you know,
totally.
We have neuroscientists having a love affair with Buddha's practices and studying the effects on the brain. So there's actually science that shows the long-term effects of not only meditation, but also compassion. Beautiful studies coming out more and more. So kindness for ourselves and other beings. Altruism is the real path to happiness. But we don't discover that until we get still. You know?
So, yeah. Now, you talk about, too, you do, you know, on this point, compassion fatigue that some people might experience because of everything that's going on around us, the natural disasters and different worthy causes asking for help and contributions. How do you have any suggestions on how to stay mindful and compassionate when all of this stuff is going on?
Yeah, and I talk about, it's a really great point to clarify here about compassion. A lot of times what happens is people are compassionate to everybody but themselves. And in my work that I do, mostly I teach self-compassion because that's the gap. You know, people cannot direct it often toward themselves. So I often tell people, like, if compassion isn't real until it includes you. So we might be doing all these other things for everybody else and not sleeping and not eating properly and, you know, in really bad relationships and, you know, so we might be doing these things, but the compassion has to include ourselves. So mostly in Oakland, which I, you know, work with a lot of educators and activists and those people who are very socially engaged, my main focus with them is compassion for themselves. And out of that, there's this natural flow and you know balance. When you have compassion for yourself, you don't get out of balance because the compassion itself goes, no, no, don't go there. No, no, that's not, you know, you have a boundary. You don't get compassion fatigue as much because compassion fatigue really comes when we lose track of our boundary and we take on way more than we can digest. And I've experienced that at different stages in life. And I would always like to come back to doing self-compassion.
Because so you can grow your fuse almost, or you can grow your container, you can grow your capacity by continuing to focus on yourself.
Yes, all good things come from that. Self-love, self-compassion. Ultimately, the book is really a declaration towards self-compassion.
Manifesto. Oh dear, this is
better.
Yes, a manifesto. And I, folks, you have to get this book because I'm holding it right now, and it almost looks like a notebook, almost looks like a workbook. Like I want to take a pencil to it, and I want to underline things and circle things, and take it into my, you know. And the foreword is by your lovely teacher Jack Kornfield, who's a very prolific author and lovely. And he says, "Amidst uncertain times, we need strong and inspiring medicine, a fierce heart." You will find this medicine, beautiful teachings and heartfelt stories that can transform your day and change your life. That's from your friend and teacher, Jack Kornfield. So I love that. So Spring, tell us, please, where we can get our hold of this book.
So currently it's available everywhere. You can buy it online, on Amazon. It's in bookstores.
Yay.
So you can just also check my website, springwasham.com, and get more information there. But it's everywhere now. I'm so happy.
Great. And by the way, that's springwasham.com. That's SpringWasham. And then up in Oakland, for those listening here in California, the East Bay Meditation Center, can anyone come for a class?
Yeah, it's completely open. It's all donation based. You can just look up East Bay Meditation Center and you'll find tons of classes, workshops. We're doing things 7 days a week there, all based on generosity based economics. Yes.
Generosity-based economics. Oh my gosh. Okay. I think I've completely fallen in love with you and your work. Thank you so much. Thank you, mindful listeners. It is time to go out and get a fierce heart. This is a book that's already out by Spring Washam, forward by Jack Kornfield, Finding Strength, Courage, and Wisdom in Any Moment. Thank you so much for being here, Spring. Thanks for the work that you do. We'll keep on sort of propagating self-compassion because we know whatever we can give into ourselves, we makes us so much greater in giving out to the rest of the world. And I think it's so important, especially these days. And for folks listening, thanks again for joining us. And until next time.